tuning in to Inside Scoop Live. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and my guest on the program today is author Jim Arnold. Jim has just published his full-length novel, Benediction, but as a writer, he has been at the craft for years authoring feature film screenplays and teleplays. Jim previously teamed up with Eureka Street Pictures and directed the documentary short, Our Brothers, Our Sons, which was about generational differences around HIV/AIDS in gay men, and it was nominated for Best Documentary at the 2002 Turin International Gay and Lesbian Film Festival. Jim has written for Frontiers, Variety, Prime Health and Fitness, and other periodicals and fiction anthologies. He began his career in musical theater and holds a BA in journalism and film from Marquette University and has studied film production writing in MFA programs at the University of Southern California, the Writers Program at UCLA, and at the Film Arts Foundation in San Francisco. And currently he is living in Los Angeles. His book's website is eurekastreetpress.com. And I know that Jim has blogs and other websites that we'll get him to talk about later today. So that said, welcome to the program, Jim.
Thank you, Juanita. It's great to be here.
Thank you for being here. I know it's an early morning for you in L.A. You just got back from New Orleans on a book signing event.
That's right. We did a first book signing for Benediction on Saturday at the bookstore. It's called FAB. That's Faubourg Marigny Art and Books in New Orleans, and it was great. Had a nice little crowd, and we sold some books, and it was really a lot of fun.
That's exciting. So why did you decide to do your first event in New Orleans?
It kind of worked out with another event that was going on there for my family. My niece was getting married there, and when I found out about that date, I tried to make it a dual-purpose trip and found an independent bookstore that was very interested in hosting the event, so it all worked out just great.
Fantastic, and a good response, which is always great for an author on a first book.
Yes, that was nice. It's very interesting how they do it out on the sidewalk in front of the store, which has a great street traffic and a very kind of eclectic neighborhood there in New Orleans, and so a lot of the people who were just walking by in the street stopped by when I was reading to take a listen to the story. You know, which was very gratifying, of course, for me as an author, and a really interesting way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So you took on this whole project, this storyline, as a novel, and I'm interested to find out why you decided to take on the book at this point as opposed to turn this idea into a screenplay.
Well, I was thinking about the story for quite a while, and it seemed to be one of those stories where I wanted to get into the head of the character, quite deeply, and I felt that the novel format was probably a better way to tell that story than with a screenplay. You're pretty much limited to the form, which is 120 pages, and it's kind of a blueprint for a movie, an art form of a different kind. And with the novel, I felt I could explain much more of the feelings of the character considering the subject matter of cancer, and it just seemed to fit much better.
Was it an enjoyable process for you?
It was tremendously enjoyable. I wrote most of it through classes in the UCLA Writers Program and really enjoyed the freedom of using as many words as I needed to tell this story, which most of my creative writing in the past has been scripts, screenplays, mm-hmm. or teleplays, and you're very constricted as to the form there, and have to be very economical with words. But with a novel, I could be more expansive, and really enjoyed that process.
Mm, fantastic. So you mentioned cancer. You've taken on some big themes in this book, which I really want you to go in depth with. But I want to talk a little bit about the humor and mm-hmm. the sarcasm, the tone that you're bringing with this novel. It really is interesting. So talk to us about setting the tone for Benediction and how, really, as a writer, you've consciously kept this flowing through the whole story.
Well, yeah, the book is told in first person. Our main character is Ben Schmidt, who's a middle-aged gay man, who finds out he's got prostate cancer. And, you know, he's a, I don't know, stereotypical is, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe a good word, or maybe it's not quite right, but he's a very urbane and contemporary character from a large city. In this case, it's San Francisco, so he has somewhat of a, you know, campy sensibility and certainly an ironic take on the world. So you always are seeing the story through that filter of his eyes, kind of a Ben versus the world scenario. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's a highly flawed character. You know, he's very judgmental. I think he jumps to conclusions about people all the time. He's quite apprehensive of himself, his friends, his future. And, you know, I think a lot of that kind of tension comes through. But at the same time, it's a very serious subject, but it's darkly funny and, you know, an interesting journey as well to go through, and not at all, you know, a downer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So where did the idea for Ben come about? How long has this character been kind of rattling around for you?
Well, you know, it's based a lot on myself and people I've known. You know, some of the things in the book come from personal experience. You know, I myself am a cancer survivor, and you know, also did make a short film, which is also a big part of this book. So, you know, a couple of the basic structural things are things that happened in my life, although the specifics of the novel are, of course, very fictional. And I wanted to you know, take some of my memories and, you know, change them to a more of an overarching character that, you know, that somebody that wasn't me but had aspects of my personality but was, I don't know, you know, perhaps more entertaining than I felt I was myself. And I think his outlook on the world is unique and something that we haven't seen before. You know, I did a lot of background research into finding out what had been written on a, you know, on prostate cancer on a fictional basis, and really couldn't mm-hmm. find much of anything. There's mm-hmm. a lot of memoirs out there, mostly written by very different types of people, mostly older, straight men, which, you know, and they weren't, you know, humorous at all.
Right.
And you know, I wanted to, you know, have a gay character who was a little younger. You know, I think there's a myth that prostate cancer is only an old man's disease,
mm-hmm.
and there's lots of men in their 40s and even 30s who get it and have to deal with all of that, and so I wanted to show that in a fictional way.
Well, it's an issue, too, that aren't they saying right now that at some point it's going to affect a man, whether it be at a younger age or an older age? I mean, it's
yes.
pretty prevalent.
Yes, I believe the statistics that I recall are 1 in 6 men in their lifetime will be diagnosed with prostate cancer. And it's true that if you are, you know, older, say in your 70s or beyond that, that it's almost inevitable because it's just something that happens with age. But the illness is quite a bit serious.
Mm-hmm.
If you get it when you're a younger person because of the treatments that they have to do to ensure, you know, that you will live, you know, a regular lifespan. And there's not a tremendous amount of data on that because of, you know, the current treatments they use to cure prostate cancer or, you know, battle it or whatever. Are fairly recent, so they don't have a lot of long-term data on that.
Yeah, absolutely. So Ben is really, really facing his own mortality, looking at the meaning of life in this whole storyline. And so how does his process and that whole journey overlay what you experienced?
Well, you know, my own story is a little different.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the Ben's case, his illness is a little bit more serious than mine was,
mm-hmm.
and it affects him probably a little deeper. Obviously, you want it to, you know, you make it a good read and, you know, make the story as dramatic as possible. You know, I think that a lot of it was similar, and I tried to present the disease aspects of cancer in a, you know, mostly realistic way as I could, and accurate, of course. You know, I certainly wouldn't want anybody to use the book as a manual for how to deal with prostate cancer because it's meant to entertain.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a lot of factual information in there about the disease and how it's treated, and, you know, hopefully hopefully it's written about in an entertaining and, you know, humorous way, you know, humorous in the face of, you know, an absolute total change in lifestyle for a, you know, young middle-aged man.
Mm-hmm. And you tackle midlife crisis as well. I mean, he's going through quite a time in his life.
That's right. He is. I mean, he's, you know, he's in the business world. He's mildly successful but unfulfilled. I think he sees himself as an artist. He would really like to be this filmmaker, and the little movie he's made is, you know, kind of his little pride and joy. And so there's that going on. You know, he's got really a lot of conflicts at work at the same time that he gets cancer, and he's got a lot of work drama with, you know, an enemy there who wants to get rid of him, and they're all in the you know, the crucible of the dot-com bubble in San Francisco at the end of the 90s, the early 2000s. And so that plays a big part. And also, you know, his libido. He's lived the life of a single gay man in an urban area in America at a certain time, which is a very freeing experience. And the changes that are wrought with the prostate cancer really throw a wrench, so shall we say, into those works, and he has to kind of grow up a little bit and deal with his sex life in a new way after the illness.
In a more mature way.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little more about the other characters, the secondary characters, the antagonists.
Okay. Well, you know, as I said, there's a guy at work who is bent, you know, hell-bent on getting rid of Ben. It's Paul Sutcliffe, who's kind of the anti-Ben, the antithesis of everything that Ben would think he is. So there's a lot of conflict there. Ben does have a boyfriend, although he has many other guys on the side, but, you know, a fellow named Jake Brousseau, who's a neighbor who lives upstairs, is his long-term boyfriend. You know, I think he constantly is challenging Ben to be a better man than he is. And, you know, Jake is, you know, kind of depicted as a little Mr. Perfect sometimes, although he does have his own flaws, and those are brought out as well. But I don't want to tell too much
don't
about
give
that.
Don't give too much
I'd
away.
I'd rather have people read it. And then, of course, there's Karen, Karen Kling, who's kind of Ben's best friend forever, a straight woman, a married woman, who also served as producer on his movie, and they're kind of soulmates, you know, very much you know, have that purpose, I think, for each other, that, you know, kind of confidant and, you know, really nice back and forth kind of relationship that I really enjoyed writing about.
And so tell us about the setting. You know, you mentioned San Francisco. How important was the setting for this novel?
Yes, it's set in San Francisco. I think that is important because of the long-term and very large gay culture that's there. You know, it allows Ben to have the kind of lifestyle that he wouldn't necessarily have in other parts of the United States or other cities in the world. But, you know, he is a businessman as well as, you know, resident of San Francisco. So there's significant parts of the book that take place in other areas, including Vegas, Sydney, Australia, New York, Europe, specifically Italy, and Los Angeles itself. So he does tend to travel a lot, and that that figures very much into the structure of the book. It's a journey not only, you know, with the cancer, but also quite literally with his business travel.
Mm-hmm. So have you been to all of those places that you chose?
I have been briefly to Sydney, although I wish I could spend more time there, and Italy, of course. But yes, I've spent significant time in those places in the United States, Vegas, New York, and of course, L.A., which is where I live. So
yeah, I'd love for you to talk a little bit about L.A., because, I mean, it's such a creative place. You're in the heart of the film industry. And so what does it mean to you living in L.A. as a writer and being right in the center, in the epicenter?
It's been very interesting. I had a long career. My writing career basically is parallel to a public relations career. I do business writing for my day job, and I've worked in entertainment and entertainment technology for the last 20 years or so. I've worked for Paramount Pictures for a while. I worked for Dolby Laboratories, you know, which is entertainment technology, sound technology. And I've written a lot of scripts, which, you know, I never have been made, but it's, yeah, you're right in the center of it. So it was interesting to write a novel which wasn't focused on, let's just say, being sold to that industry or anything like that. A very freeing experience. But, you know, I've loved living here. I've been here for the most, going on 30 years now, and it's a very interesting place to live and to work.
I've heard fantastic things about LA. Do you find that the book writing community there is more underground then? It's more subtle?
I don't know if I would say it's more subtle, but it's certainly a vibrant community.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you maybe have to search a little bit more. There's with the industry, with the movie and TV industry, there's very much a focus on the external rewards, like the deal and the money and the movie stars, and you know what actually happens with projects. I think that the book writing community is more focused on maybe the work.
Mm.
You know, I mean, I'm kind of new to the book writing community, so it's kind of something that I'm just finding out about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have the same problems with the book business as are everywhere in the world, probably, in that independent bookstores are closing their doors and the whole business aspect of books seems to be consolidating into, you know, a few large chains and then online. So, you know, we have those challenges here too. At the same time, there's that great tradition of Los Angeles literary writers, you know, and the works that have been done here that also very much include Los Angeles itself as a character, which is what I'm hoping to do in my next book.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Are you looking for new ways to promote your book? Why not consider being interviewed live? With the huge impact internet radio as well as podcasting is making in our society, your voice can now be heard worldwide. Let Juanita at Inside Scoop Live create the necessary steps for you. You will not only receive a web page of your own, but your interview will be available for MP3 download and RSS feed. As well, your interview will be posted on venues such as iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, Podcast Alley, and the Inside Scoop Live blog. Go to InsideScoopLive.com today for more information. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. I'm talking today with Jim Arnold. He is the author of Benediction, and you can find out more about Jim and his book at EurekaStreetPress.com, as well JamesJosephArnold.com. And your next book, I know that you have another project that is already in the works, another novel. I'm interested in finding out about why you decided to self-publish. You went the route of print on demand,
mm-hmm.
which is a big task. It's a big deal for a first-time author.
You're not kidding.
And yeah.
I am really finding that out now, about a month after the book was, you know, print ready. Yes. Well, I felt it was somewhat of a niche book. It's a book about cancer.
Mm-hmm.
A gay man with cancer. So, you know, you have to pick a genre. Yet this one is classified as gay fiction, although I think it has a tremendous crossover potential with, you know, basically anybody who might have had prostate cancer or you know, might get it, you know,
mm-hmm.
which is basically every man in the world, as well as for women who, you know, obviously have men in their life who also might have to deal with this disease in some way. But, you know, it was a niche audience, the gay market specifically, is something I know very well, and I think that with my background in public relations and publicity, I had the knowledge to be able to promote the internet marketing of this title.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think I read somewhere that you should expect to spend an hour a day for a year doing some promotion, online promotion of the book, and so I pretty much committed myself to that task.
Mm, that's a good gauge, at least that, I would think.
Yes, I would think so.
Yeah, it's almost a job unto itself, right?
Yes, it is. You know, it's very challenging because, you know, I do have a full-time day job and I do want to write this next novel. So there's also that other task of promoting the current one that's out there. And, you know, when you do print on demand, you're the person that does all of that. You do everything yourself. So, you know, it's been very interesting so far. And, you know, we've gotten some reviews, which have been great. And I'm encouraging friends to if they like the book, to post an Amazon review on the Amazon sell page and you know, trying to build that up. And I think that's how these things get known out there in the internet world.
Yeah, and it's so important to get out there on the internet. And I understand that you actually have a Facebook fan page that is getting a lot of attention.
I do. Actually, a Facebook fan page for Benediction. That's what it's called, the Benediction Book fan page. And I'm targeting English speakers, English readers from around the world, because I figure you can order the book on Amazon no matter where you are on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's not just the United States and Canada, but UK and Ireland and Australia and New Zealand and South Africa and India, you know, all places where, you know, English is an official language or their people read novels in English. So I do have fans from all of those places, you know. We're building slowly on Facebook, but yes, it's definitely, that's my idea. My plan is to get out there worldwide.
Absolutely. Got to love the internet for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So do you find that, you know, you just subtly mentioned it, the whole genre of gay fiction, I mean, you have to kind of classify a book when it comes out, unfortunately. Are you finding that is a difficult genre to sell in, that you have to become a little more creative?
So far, no. I think that that there is a tradition already on the internet of marketing books to that niche,
mm-hmm.
and there's an awful lot of websites devoted to that I'm finding. You know, we as a community, I think there were a lot of independent bookstores focused on, you know, gay and lesbian novels or books in general. You know, that case in point, the bookstore that I was just at in New Orleans, it's been there for 30 years, and that is, you know, their focus is gay and lesbian literature as well as New Orleans-centric literature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and 30 years is a long time to be
wow.
to be an independent bookstore, and they're doing great, it looks like. So, you know, there is that tradition, and it's just, you know, I have to find my audience rather than my audience finding me. So
mm-hmm.
a lot of research I'm doing into independent bloggers who write about gay fiction on the internet. And I'm finding there's really a lot of them. So I'm hoping to get them interested in, of course, in talking about Benediction.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you have a blog. So do you do a lot of linking? Yeah, and let's mention your blog.
Yeah, it's jimarnoldla.wordpress.com.
Mm-hmm.
JimArnoldLA.wordpress.com, and I'm new to blogging. I just started it a few months ago, and, you know, really need to make that a part of every day as well. I think, you know, the more that you blog, the more followers or hits that you get. And so I'm just in the process of learning about how to do that effectively and linking other websites to my blog. And so, you know, it's going to be a lot about Benediction. I just posted some things about the trip to New Orleans the other day, and probably I'll also do things, you know, focused on, you know, other personal interests of mine, like you know, public transportation is a big one, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, other green issues. But yes, I'm learning how to do that.
Excellent. So let's mention again this other novel that you're currently undertaking, the one that's set in L.A.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't have a title yet.
Okay.
It's a story that encompasses at least two time periods, 25 years apart, so that you get the characters when they're young, you know, say in their 20s, and then, you know, 25 years later when they're around 50-ish or whatever. And it concerns a couple of best friends, a man and a woman, and, you know, how they lived their lives at those two time periods. And I may actually bring in a third time period that I'm really, really interested in, the history of Los Angeles and the newness of the urban area, which is 100 years ago, say, where I live, was, you know, either a farm or an orange grove or something.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple hundred years ago, it was, you know, the Spanish land grant ranchos. And, you know, I'm kind of interested in exploring, you know, the different kinds of human habitation that occurred on the same plot of ground over the over time.
Oh,
and,
that's fascinating.
And exploring that a little bit, yes. Also, the 25-year periods, the first one is 1984, and then the second one is 2000, you know, our current year, 2009.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, in 1984, we had the Olympics were here in L.A., so that's an interesting event that brings up a lot of plot possibilities. And my main character in this one is going to be a woman, a straight woman. Her name is Eden. I don't know too much more about her, but... you know, she's I think an interesting woman. She's got a lot of, you know, middle-aged issues, unfulfilled things going on in her life,
mm.
and that's what I'm hoping to explore. But also to very much make Los Angeles a central character.
A character as well, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that you're focusing on the 80s. It's just really interesting. I grew up in the 80s, and seeing it come back kind of full circle to now, so many themes, I mean, the way people are dressing, it's interesting to see the 80s coming back.
Yes, you know, I think that you take a few years, and then you get some perspective, and you think, oh, this was a really interesting time, I want to revisit this, you know, especially
mm-hmm.
if you lived through it, and, you know, how people thought about the world then versus how they think about it now.
Yeah.
Also, you know, how a young person thinks about the world and a middle-aged person thinks about the world and the different issues that come up. And so I'm really interested in exploring these two, you know, these two characters and definitely more, of course, but these two main characters in their youth and then seeing what they're like after you get a little bit more seasoning in your life, too. I think that's really interesting. And the city has changed considerably.
Oh, considerably. It sounds like you really like to explore characters and journeys, personal journeys in your writing.
I think that's true. Yeah, I'm still new at this, but
mm-hmm.
I very, very much like to, you know, maybe talk about life journeys and, you know, what we think our life is going to be like in our 20s, say, inevitably turns out so much differently when we get older. I'm really interested in exploring, you know, how people think about their lives that way. And,
mm.
you know, if it's their excitement or is there regret or is there a combination of the two or, you know, how we ended up where we are is a really interesting question to ask.
Absolutely. Okay, TV projects. I know you have some in the works, and please tell us about Troll Place.
Yes, Troll Palace.
Troll Palace
is a tongue-in-cheek name for the first gay and lesbian retirement home, which I set here in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a fictional place. There actually is a real gay and lesbian retirement home here, you know, and I think news stories of that kind of jogged my imagination about this. But
is that the picture on one of your websites?
No.
Okay.
That's a non-related building that I just took as a, you know.
It's a great old building, whatever it is.
Yeah, that's actually an apartment building in Pasadena.
Okay.
But it's not, you know, okay, lesbian retirement home. Yeah, but what I did is I set this fictional hour drama, comedy, dramedy, even though I hate that word, that's kind of what it is. In the Echo Park neighborhood of Los Angeles, which is a very kind of interesting melting pot, a very Latin neighborhood, very quickly changing old neighborhood, and the neighbors were really unhappy about, you know, the gay and lesbian seniors moving in and kind of wanted the building for their own people, and so there's a lot of neighborhood involvement and interaction with the neighbors, the store keepers, the gang members, the police, the city council, as well as the residents of the home. It's a very interesting thing to me to think of all the great actors and actresses who've gone
mm.
past a certain age in their life, and people don't, you know, the Hollywood writers don't write roles for them for the most part. And I thought, well, how great would it be to have a television series where there's tons of roles for these great older actors and actresses. And so that was part of the idea as well. And I don't think it's a population that's been investigated or written about very much. And so yes, that's Troll Palace, which is a pilot
it.
I'm working on. That also has a website, it's trollpalace.com, and a Facebook fan page too, where I've been trying to build up an audience that I can point to when I go pitch this to the executives in Hollywood about the series, saying, oh, there's all these people on Facebook that seem to like this idea.
Yeah, so get on there and get on your Facebook page and help build you up. Do you think that will be a hard sell for the industry?
Yes. Oh, absolutely, because the demographic they're always looking at is young males from, like, 18 to 30.
Yeah.
And what would appeal to them?
Yeah.
And this is, a kind of a, baby boomer and older demographic. I think there's a place for it. But, yes, absolutely, it will be a hard sell. It's not, based on a superhero comic book character or car racing or something.
but it sounds like a great project.
Yeah, well, sure. I mean, remember Golden Girls? That was a huge success.
Exactly.
Although this is, an hour show, and it's I got definitely dramatic, parts to it. But, that was, so you just never know what might, be of interest until you actually do it and put it up there.
You really have a lot of projects on the go.
There's a few things, yes, keeping me busy.
Yeah, and I know that you have some other screenplays that you're kind of working at as well.
Right. Yes, mm-hmm. I've written a number of scripts. They're all listed on my website, jamesjosepharnold.com. The genres include crime. I did a romantic period piece. There's a Hollywood satire there, and my latest film script is actually a neo noir set out in Palm Springs called Kept.
Mm.
And it's basically it's kind of a reworking of some great old noir plots like Double Indemnity, reworked for contemporary audience with a few more twists tucked in, and I've gotten a little bit of attention, but as I said at the beginning, I haven't ever sold one, so hope springs eternal with this stuff.
Yeah. So what keeps you going? What keeps you so passionate and propels you to continue writing? I mean, I would imagine that there would be a burnout factor at some point, but it seems like you're getting a second wind or something is happening here.
Yeah, I think I got more focused in recent years to really work on that and really work on the craft. I love writing. It's just, I don't know what I would do if I didn't have that.
Mm.
It provides a great creative outlet for me. I really love it. Like I said, I really love doing the novel form, but I also really like the screenplays and the teleplays. And it's a challenge to be so economic with words and still tell a great story and imagine it, imagine actors actually putting the thing together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Has there been any authors or writers that have really, for lack of a better word, influenced you, or that you've modeled your writing style after, or that you just kind of see their influence in your work?
I would say that I've been influenced by, probably really a lot of people in the television realm. I just think as we were talking, thinking Alan Ball, 6 Feet Under, one of the best series, I think, ever, which I just so tremendously enjoyed. The West Wing, although I wouldn't say that my writing style is similar, it's just so unbelievably well done.
Great writing.
Aaron Sorkin and others. And in the novel world, I was profoundly influenced by Paul Monette's work, and also Joan Didion, probably one of my favorite writers, at least her journalism short stories, the Slouching Towards Bethlehem and things like that. I just really have loved those and reading those over and over again. So I would say those are influences.
Great. Great. Jim, our time is kind of coming to an end. This has been such a great conversation with you today.
Thank you, Juanita. It's been really fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just wish you all the best with Benediction. This is such a great first novel that you're putting out there. There is really some great reviews coming back. So all the best to you, and please come back and talk with us again when you have come out with your second project.
Oh, I would love to. Thanks so much.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have a list of websites to mention here. So EurekaStreetPress.com, which is your book website, JimArnoldLA.wordpress.com, and that's your blog, and JamesJosephArnold.com, which I think is kind of a pivot point for a lot of your different projects.
That's right.
And Troll Palace. I keep wanting to say place. Troll Palace.
Right, TrollPalace.com, which is the... Yeah, the fictional series in development would really encourage listeners to go there and check that out. And then if they're on Facebook, to join the Facebook page for Benediction and for Troll Palace, because I post updates all the time about what's happening with that. And, you know, hopefully with Troll Palace, we'll get some meetings or there'll be some action at some point, and I'll be able to share that news on Facebook as well as the website.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Thank you so much, Jim. All the best. Enjoy your day in L.A. recovering from your New Orleans trip.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Same to you.
All right. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, listeners, that's been Jim Arnold all the way from L.A. His new book, Benediction, is on shelves now, and the book website, EurekaStreetPress.com, also it's available through online booksellers or your local bookstore. Walk in there. If they don't have it on the shelf, ask them to order it, and they will. Support your local bookstore, I say. So anyway, I hope you have enjoyed our interview with Jim today. I want to thank you for tuning in to Inside Scoop Live. I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.